Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Kai Zanders and Mark Dixon as we talk about the continued intrigue surrounding Johns Hopkins redevelopment as a program in the wake of Dave Petromala's departure. First, Peter Milliman was hired, and then attention turned to how was he going to build out his staff. Late last week, Ty reported that Jamison Kester, the defensive coordinator from UMBC, would be the first addition. And then on Monday afternoon, the Blue Jays announced that one of the game's all-time great players, John Grant Jr., who had been an assistant at Air Force, was rounding out the full-time staff. In addition to that, two meaningful player notes that Ty had. First, our number one ranked underclass transfer, Fernandez, was selected Homewood Field as his new destination, and Cole Williams, who entered the portal, a Blue Jay senior who entered the portal shortly after Dave Petromala's departure from the program, had withdrawn from the portal and was intending to stay with the Blue Jays. Ty, a whirlwind weekend of events and news. How did you react to all of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was definitely a win for Hopkins across the board. A very strong 3 or 4 days that I think was big for that program. I think that to get Jamison Kester, it was just massive, and I think that's the hire, that is the acquisition that I think will have the biggest impact long term on Hopkins, just in terms of recruiting and his defensive mastery and face-off work. Those are the three areas that can definitely be shored up. So it was a big few days, and I think that the future is pretty bright in Hopkins. Obviously, a lot of things they still have to do, things they still have to figure out. But, definitely a nice stretch for the Jays.
Mark, as an alum, one of the things that so many folks were interested in with respect to how Milliman was going to fill his staff was how he situated the value of being an alum. And so by tapping Kesterer first, he kind of satisfied that quota. At least that was the way some, folks outside of the kind of contingent saw it. What was your reaction as an alum?
I thought it was a home run right off the bat. And when you look at Peter Milliman, and I have a little bit of a unique perspective, I'm an alum, broadcaster, etc. But for the last couple of weeks, I've been an alum since the news broke back with Dave Petromala and his entire staff stepping down, and then the search for the head coach. Then you get Peter Milliman in the mix. And then right away, the question, look, this guy isn't an alum, and you were on the Zoom presser that I was, so were you, Ty. And Coach Milliman admittedly said, I still need to learn a lot about Johns Hopkins. Well, what better way to learn about the program than a guy like Jamison Kester, a graduate of the school, won two national championships as a player, a guy who was a grad assistant right when he graduated. So I think Hopkins is a very unique place in speaking with coaches throughout the search for Dave Petromala's replacement. The one thing that a lot of people said was, everybody knows that's a great job and a prestigious university and a storied program, but not a whole lot of people understand or know a lot about Johns Hopkins aside from what you may read, what you may see on television, what you may hear. So hiring a guy like Jamison not only speaks to all the points that Ty made, but I think the biggest point is he's a bridge to Peter Milliman and the alums. He's a guy that can introduce Peter to people. He's a guy that can also share some of the experiences, some of the traditions, some of the must-knows about the program. So I think it was a home run hire. It's a hire that had to happen.
And at the opposite end of the spectrum, there was some rumbling that one of the candidates he was looking at for his offensive coordinator was a, quote, big name. That was something I heard at the end of last week. And didn't really understand what that meant, but certainly in retrospect, it makes a lot of sense that that would be a reference to Junior. Again, the opposite end of the spectrum in the sense that, only has 2 years experience as a college coach, not an alum, but certainly an incredibly high profile move that would get you excited. What was the alumni contingent's reaction to that?
A lot of excitement. And you hit the nail on the head, a big name, a guy who has won at all levels as a player. And then obviously going to Air Force, only coaching for a couple of years, but he's well known. And I think the two biggest things, the biggest thing you have to take care of are the players. And that goes also goes for the hiring of Jamison Kester, included in this response. But with John Grant Jr., the guys know who he is. They've watched him play. And I think that what he's done at Air Force, along with Bill Wilson, is very impressive. When you consider what they inherited after the end of Eric Saramet's coaching tenure at the Air Force Academy, Air Force has been a really competitive team, and they've made the NCAA tournament the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, or at least contended for that SoCon championship. And to come back and perform at that level that they have after what took place, that's a testament to that coaching staff. And I think that's a testament to John Grant Jr. And I think that's a guy who, you know, big name, a lot of success, well known, but now he has to prove it at a higher level. I think that's baked into the understanding of the alumni. But to get a guy like John Grant, you know, I think you satisfied a lot of criteria and a lot of wishes with the hiring of Jamison Kesterer on a lot of different fronts. And now you bring in a guy that you can get excited about, who knows the game very, very well. I know that he's very involved on the recruiting trail. Saw him many times this past summer and fall at recruiting events. So I think it's a big splash and something that the alums are really excited about.
Ty, I know you hold Jamison Kester in really high regard as an assistant and a coach and in recruiting. Why? What is it about him that you are most impressed by?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, just going back to, you know, kind of piggyback on top of a point that Mark made, like, he does bridge that gap between, you know, with the alums, but I also think that he has so many similarities in terms of his personality and, you know, with Dave Petromala. And, you know, Petro was one of the most beloved recruiters on the trail, and the relationships that he built. I think that Jamison does a really good job with that. And a lot of people, whether it's parents, club coaches, high school coaches, whoever, they all have very good things to say about, you know, the job that he's done over the years. And I think that his tenure at Ohio State and helping them build that program and build, you know, have more talent and have the program success be more sustainable. You know, that's Jamison had his fingerprints all over that Ohio State 2017, you know, Final Four team, and the top recruits that he got to Columbus, and the job that he's done in general, wherever he's been. I just feel like that's exactly what Hopkins needs. An alum who is outgoing, that is a presence, you know, certainly physically, is someone that you cannot miss on the trail. But he's a relationship guy. And, you know, I think that he's just passionate in every single thing that he does. I've watched him loads and loads of times at different camps all over, from, you know, California to Florida to Maryland, and just watching, you know, how engaged he is and innovative, and just passionate. I think he's a very, very good teacher of the game. And, you know, I really feel like, you know, player development is an area that Hopkins has needed to improve. And, you know, Jamison will do that. But I think just in terms of what he provides as a recruiter, the way that he identifies talent and sees, you know, the players that maybe, you know, wouldn't jump out to me or another recruiter out there, you know, Jamison does that and then, you know, builds them up. So, you know, I think that's why people should be, you know, pretty excited. Hopkins fans should be pretty excited about what he can do with that Hopkins defense, you know, where people may think that, there's not enough talent to get the job done. No disrespect meant for UMBC here, but I think it speaks volumes about Jamison, the job he did at UMBC without his own players, his own recruits, and Rymo's own recruits. I really feel like it says so much about Jamison that he built UMBC's defense into a top 10, top 20 unit just off the bat and consistently. So when he gets that's Hopkins Big Ten level talent at Homewood, I really think that the sky's the limit.
You mentioned a lot about recruiting, and I think that was it's certainly one of the first places that people turn their attention, both in terms of analyzing a prospect or a prospective coach, so to speak, when you actually dig into the specifics of this. So, you know, take a look at the types of players that Cornell brought in when Milliman was leading their recruiting process, combined with what you mentioned about, you know, Jameson and his tenure. And then hard, I think, to evaluate a lot about what Junior would have contributed to a unique situation being a service academy and B, a relatively short tenure there. But certainly you can forecast and speculate as to what type of players he might favor and what type of style he might want to employ. But then you also have to consider both the current roster at Homewood as well as the 2020 classes and the 2021 class, both of which are very strong. What do you think this roster is going to look like, and what are the early returns on what you've seen, both with respect to the Fernandez and Williams news and then also with a couple of 21s that have decided to move on from their commitment to the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with, you know, the unfortunate reality of it. I mean, I think that if you look at the roster numbers at Hopkins and the commits that are coming in, I mean, I believe it's as many as 18 incoming freshmen. And remember, I mean, that's a number that is very, very high, you know, relative to what we usually see with the average, maybe, you know, 10, 11, 12 kids. But then you think about the fact that there will be a, you know, a doubly big freshman class, and that's daunting. So I think that I would, you know, certainly expect, you know, that staff to maybe have to trim the fat and, unfortunately, you know, cut ties with players after fall ball or whenever it is, just because there's just there's too many of them, and it's hard to be able to coach 64, 65 guys, you know, no matter who you are. So I think that there are some takes that were maybe a bit head scratching over the years, but from a recruiting standpoint and a talent standpoint, Hopkins will be getting a lot of it this upcoming season. I feel like this class was a group that Dave Petramal and his staff did a really good job building and holding on to. I think they lost some great players in the 19 class and 18 class, you know, that got flipped by opposing programs. But this 20 class has stayed together and it has high level talent and Grimes and McDermott at attack and Scott Smith on defense. And then, you know, some studs from Canada that, you know, I'm sure Junior, you know, can't wait to work with. But, you know, I feel really good about, you know, this incoming group. I just think that, you know, I'm really intrigued to see, you know, what happens with the roster, because I as good as I feel about the highest level players in the 20 class and the 21 class, I'm a little bit skeptical of some of the names and skill sets of the guys, you know, down the list. So I think, you know, that'll be something that they will have to do and have the freedom to do. And you don't want to rock the boat too much and cut ties with some players that are, you know, meaningful components of the program, the locker room, the culture, you know, players' favorites. I think you got to be careful there. But I do feel like that's something that, you know, could happen at some point. And then, you know, my last point, I'll talk about the 21s here. I mean, unfortunate that Hopkins had to lose Will Peden and, you know, from Malvern Prep, he's a number 58 junior, I believe. And then today, Ethan Long, another, you know, top 60 player, but from Calvert Hall. You know, I think that was a tough go for Hopkins, knowing they didn't really have much talent, you know, or the numbers offensively. I think they're now down to just one offensive recruit, and that's Sam Teachout from Dallas. So, you know, certainly intrigued to see what Pete and Jameson and Junior, you know, do with that 21 class, especially given the fact that, you know, people aren't as high on that class, at least relative to the 22. So, you know, I think that's where, you know, I'm also very intrigued to see what they can do, because this 22 class is just so talented and so many players have Hopkins ties or would have interest in the school that, you know, I'm really curious to see what they do with that group, because I think that's much bigger than the 21s.
Mark, you mentioned the excitement that the alumni group feels coming away from the last 2 weeks, particularly when, you know, maybe some were ruffled by the decision not to retain Dave Petramala for a year or beyond. And my question is now, as you shift the focus, both as an alum and as a broadcaster, to 2021, assuming that the season is able to go forward as hoped and expected, what are the expectations for the team? This was a group that was, you know, within the skin of their teeth of being 1-5 when the 2020 season was canceled. What is the alumni group's expectations for success in Milliman's first season?
Ruffled is a great word to use. There were a lot of bad feelings when Coach Petromile and his entire staff were said goodbye to Homewood, you know, last month. These hires have gone a long way to assuage a lot of those harsh feelings. I mean, it was funny aside, a lot of people knew the name Jamison Kesterer, but when his picture actually went up, people were like, "Hey, that's a Crooked Arrows guy. That was a coach in Crooked Arrows." So people were like right away are like, "Hey, yeah, we know that guy. He's a good guy, you know, and he's a good was a good player and a good coach." And that's Hopkins and non-Hopkins folks. Expectations, I'm not sure they've been framed up quite yet. Look, the bottom line at Johns Hopkins, no matter who the coach is win. I sent the tweet out earlier this week, about Kesterer and Grant's hiring being smart and solid. And someone replied and said, "All we want are winners," you know? So that's the bottom line at Johns Hopkins, win. Will there be some patience with this coaching staff? I think there will be. And I think a lot of people have come to the realization that this year's addition, for whatever reason, the 2020 version of the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays just weren't that good and struggled quite a bit with some losses that were not that competitive when you watch the film and you go and review some of those games. Will Peter Milliman and his staff get a mulligan their first year? I'm not really sure. But I think to Ty's point, not only is the lacrosse world excited for these great players, but I know the former coaching staff of Johns Hopkins thought very highly of these young men. And from all indications that I've heard, when it comes to the 20s, the kids that are coming in, this coaching staff values them very much as well. So I think the expectation is going to be that these kids are going to learn on the fly. There will be new culture, new personalities to learn. But I do think that the expectations will be high, but qualified for 2021 with a changing of the guard in terms of the coaching staff. I can tell you that with the hirings of Jamison Kesterer and John Grant Jr., I think there was a question amongst the alums about the commitment of the school to the success of the lacrosse program. And I think that by hiring these two coaches, the school has shown that they are committed to bringing in quality lacrosse people, quality individuals, and quality teachers of the game. And that is not to say Peter Milliman doesn't fit that criteria, but I think there were a lot more question marks with Peter Milliman. And I don't think those question marks exist as much as they did 2 weeks ago today. And that's because of the gentleman that he's hired and the backing that he's gotten from the school, so it seems. So I think those are big pluses for the alumni, for the fan base, for the people who love and really live and breathe Hopkins lacrosse. But I think it's a qualifier as well. Okay, now the real work begins. And now let's see where this goes. Let's see what direction the program heads in.
Let me put a finer point on that, because I think that it's one of those points or one of those comments that is true. But I just feel compelled to make it a little bit more blunt and plain. So, when the decision,
please
to part,
do,
I'm going to get the bat off the shoulder right here. So hot takes coming in. When the decision to part ways with Petromile was made, there were a lot of, other Division I head coaches with an affinity or, close ties to either Petro or to Hopkins and other relatively credible folks who were either saying or asking me or forecasting, speculating that this was the beginning of Hopkins, progression toward being a Division III lacrosse program. So, as is my job, I called SID, Associate Athletic Director Ernie LaRosa, and I just said, hey, you know, want you to know, it's my obligation to ask. Hearing that there's belief that Johns Hopkins might consider moving its men's and women's lacrosse programs to Division III, is there any truth to that? And he scoffed and, you know, immediately rejected the notion. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll just, you know, whatever, cited as sources within the program or whatever. He's like, no, you can attribute that to me. Johns Hopkins will not be moving Division III and in men's and women's lacrosse. And so, you know, when folks, when they hired Milliman, I reconnected with a lot of the people that I'd had a conversation with to gauge their reaction. And the comment was, they're taking the program in a different direction, which just felt like a euphemism for what they had previously said, which is this is like some sort of downgraded investment, which I can understand from the duration and length of Milliman's tenure or, you know, term as Cornell's head coach might be one of the interpretations. But when you actually analyze his wins-loss record and other metrics of success, you know, this is a candidate that on paper was incredibly desirable. And so when you then parlay it into the subsequent decisions in the intervening 2 weeks since he was hired, you know, one of the places my mind goes is, and this is not, this is going to sound a little bit like an insult or something along those lines, and it is absolutely not. John Grant is one of the most commercialized players in lacrosse history. So the point that I'm making is that very few folks understand their worth better than John Grant Jr., which means that he wasn't going to take a Johns Hopkins assistant coach job if it wasn't compensating him at a level that he knew he was worth, which suggests that the investment that people either hope for or believe the program was going to make, or I guess some of the detractors that I was laying out suggested they weren't going to make, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. So point being that to the degree that John Grant Jr. represents the Hopkins administration and Pete Milliman putting their money where their mouth is, I think you can take that to the bank. I think you can say, yeah, that it's pretty easy to infer that that probably happened. And so, you know, as you kind of roll it forward, you know, not just in terms of just win expectations, but also in terms of style. One of the things that I was talking a lot about was, you know, this notion that Hopkins has an identity, right? Or Baltimore lacrosse has an identity. Well, you know, to the degree that Quint labeled Pete as an outsider relative to his immediate reaction, and to the degree that John Grant is not just one of the best players in the history of the game, but also Canadian, Hopkins obviously has had its fair share of Canadian players come through the program in the last decade, but it seems safe to assume that they're going to play a little different than under the prior regime. What's your expectation for what this team's going to look like?
I think you hit the nail right on the head with the style. I think this is going to be a team that plays very similar to Cornell. A lot of box lacrosse influence, a lot of in tight passing, and a lot of picks, you know, down picks and up screens and things of that nature. I think that this team is going to play a lot faster. And what I mean by that is, I think, you know, whether it's fair or unfair, you know, Hopkins was a team, especially the last few years, that would get out to a decent lead and then seemingly would take the air out of the ball, pre-shot clock as well as shot clock. So I don't think that's going to happen, at least the DNA that I've seen so far, Peter Milliman as a head coach at Cornell, the way that they played. And I think Air Force played a very up-tempo style, too. So I think that it's going to be a much faster brand of lacrosse. I think it's going to be heavier on the box and less basketball, if that's a fair comparison to the basketball type offense that Johns Hopkins ran, in previous years. But I think it's important to go back to some of the things that you said, in that commentary, Terry, and that's, you know, you mentioned the feeling that Hopkins was going to maybe go the way of Division III. And Mike Preston wrote an article after Peter Milliman was hired comparing Johns Hopkins' situation right now to Washington and Lee back in the, what was that, late 70s, early 80s, when WNL went from Division I to the Division III level. I'm not sure if the stakes are that high in terms of that potential. But to your point, Athletic Director Jen Baker had a call with the Johns Hopkins Advisory Board, which is comprised of 30 alumni from Johns Hopkins. Most played lacrosse, some didn't, 15 men, 15 women. And the first words out of her mouth, and I think this took place the Wednesday or Thursday evening of the week that the coaching change was announced. And the first thing out of her mouth when she got on the phone, she says, first thing I want to say is, and the Zoom, I think it was a Zoom call, was, we are not going Division III. I'm hearing the rumors that you're hearing, we're not going Division III. I think what's different for Johns Hopkins is there is no longer a Bob Scott in the building or a Tom Calder or a Jerry Schneidman. That quote unquote lacrosse friendly athletic director, and not that Jen Baker isn't that, she just isn't, you know, an alum like Bob Scott was and wasn't under the tutelage of an alum like Bob Scott the way Tom Calder was. Jerry Schneidman was assistant to the president, so he was at a very influential position at the school, and also prior to that was the director of admissions. So I think that that is something, it's different. The Johns Hopkins Athletic Department of 2020 is much different than it even was 6 years ago. So change is inevitable, and I think that was a concern of the alumni base. And also, we have to go back to the last time and the only time that a head coach was hired with no previous affiliation to Johns Hopkins University or Johns Hopkins lacrosse, and that was Tony Seaman. And a lot of people view, again, whether it's unfair or fair, I played for Coach Seaman, they view that stretch as being a very unsuccessful stretch in Johns Hopkins lacrosse history, never made it to a national championship game. So I think some of those concerns and some of those recollections percolated when Peter Milliman was hired. But again, like we've talked about earlier in this conversation, Peter Milliman's been hired. His staff is now in place. Like you said, and I feel this way, it looks like the school and the athletic department has made a commitment to this staff to be successful. Let's see what they can do.
Ty, you and I are not Johns Hopkins alums. So my question for you is, what kind of value do you place on this insider-outsider perspective?
Yeah, you know, I think that in general, I've always felt that, you know, a program like Hopkins, where there's so much history and so many successful alums out there, so many coaches, you know, doing well, I think it's very easy to, you know, understand why alums are so passionate about alums being part of the Hopkins coaching staff. But I do feel like people were too quick to make suggestions, you know, just because I feel like Hopkins needs the best coach for that program. And I think the reaction that came after Milliman's hiring, you know, would have been totally different if he was a Hopkins alum. But like, the bottom line is that he's the right man for the job, and he has a unique perspective, and I think a refreshing perspective. I mean, talking to a current player at Hopkins recently, you know, he told me that he fully expected it to be a Hopkins alum, you know, at the helm, and, you know, that it's okay that it's not. You know, but I don't feel like it was ever a requirement, but at the same time, I think that, you know, they can kind of scratch that itch by having Kesterer. But as Mark kind of alluded to, I mean, Jameson was there in 2011 and 2012. I don't know if, any or many faces at all are still working at Hopkins, you know, from Jameson's tenure, you know, almost, you know, 10 years ago. So things are very, very different. You know, but in general, I think that everyone should be pretty happy with the way this staff looks. And I think that Milliman's experience, his outside perspective, you know, I think will benefit the program far more than it would ever hurt it. I think that it's important to understand the expectations and the tradition at Hopkins. But I think that's important for anybody, you know, regardless of your, you know, what your diploma says. So I really just, you know, I couldn't be more excited for the Hopkins lacrosse fans and that program, because I feel like, you know, they got a really good fit and someone that, you know, I think will thrive in all areas of Hopkins.
Yeah, I think, Ty, you make some great points. And I think the bottom line here, and if I haven't stressed this or said it, you know, it is what it is, and I too am excited for Johns Hopkins lacrosse. The folks that aren't, they still need to support the program, and they need to support these kids, because that's what it's all about. Going back to playing for Tony Seaman, it wasn't until after I graduated that I realized a lot of the lack of support that he did not get from the alums. And that only hurt us as players. So Hopkins Lacrosse is 136 years old. It's bigger than any individual, any group of people. And the bottom line is we want this program to be successful. When I say we, it's the Johns Hopkins community and the Johns Hopkins network. But also, I think lacrosse needs Johns Hopkins to be good. It's one of those programs that, much like a Syracuse, much like a Maryland, when they're playing at a high level and they are at their best, it makes the sport that much better.
Yeah, I'm going to totally reject that because I don't believe any of that whenever anybody says about anything. Although I will say that a full venue, there is no venue that looks as good full as Homewood Field does. So
so what are you rejecting? What are you rejecting then? What part of that
notion,
are you rejecting?
Like the idea that college football is better when Notre Dame is good, or the idea that the Major League Baseball is better when the Yankees are good. Like, that's just...
What about Alabama? I mean, let's talk current day, Alabama.
Like, yeah, I loved the late 90s when Alabama was bad.
I bet you did, Terry.
Okay. But is that a personal feeling?
It's a personal feeling for whoever thinks that it was good when they were good.
I mean, you've got Louisville. Let's say the national championship football game was Louisville and Clemson versus Alabama and Clemson. You don't think that the sport is better having Alabama? I mean, look, I have no problem. I love seeing different names painted in the end zone. But in terms of the sport, and especially a sport like lacrosse, where it's known. And look, I've got no problem with other teams. I mean, it's exciting when I go to cover the Final Four for Westwood One, and you've got an Albany in there and Yale and all those schools. But I mean, if we could have had maybe a Johns Hopkins Syracuse Final Four over the, where they're both there at the same time over the last 4 years, I think it can be argued that the crowds may have been better. The interest may have been greater, but you know, hey, look, maybe I'm wrong. I know I'm a little biased in that regard, but I feel like when your best teams and your most well-known teams are successful, that makes the sport that much more visible.
Well, that's not what you said.
Yeah,
you said
I totally agree. Yeah, and I agree. I think that, the parity is obviously, exciting for everyone, exciting for the sport, good for the sport. But, you know, there is something about Hopkins and, you know, Virginia, Syracuse, whoever it is, being in the Final Four, having success, and it's strange when they don't. They don't have that success. I mean, you know, Hopkins has been on TV, so frequently over the years. But I think that how often they were on TV, I think, kind of changed the perception of the program, the way that people view the program, because you know they just didn't understand why Hopkins wasn't winning. I understand Mark's, point fully. And I think that, to take it, one deeper as someone who, I lived in Baltimore for almost 30 years of my life. I've never lived anywhere else. And, I think one of the things I've always enjoyed so much is just how much the sport is a part of the culture here. And I think within that, how much of a part Hopkins lacrosse, is a part of the culture here within lacrosse. So, it's, I didn't grow up a Hopkins fan, never went there, but, I fell in love with the game at Homewood Field, going to games with my father. I know that, dozens and dozens of others, have similar stories. And I think that's one of the reasons why, people have looked at this, parting of ways with Dave Petromala, almost talking about it as if it's a death, or that we lost him, that it's just the magnitude of it is so strong because, you just associate the two. But, I do feel like, Milliman will be able to get this program, back to where it was. And I do agree that this is a sport that I think, has a different feel, a different feel when you have a program like Hopkins, playing in the Final Four. I'm just very curious to see what happens. I think that oftentimes I felt like Hopkins fans have always had, unreasonable expectations. The game is very different from 05 and 07 when Hopkins, had their run, won those two championships. There's so many more teams. They're competing with, you know, more schools for the talent. The game is different. The landscape is so different from the way that it was. And I think that, I think everyone is very intrigued to see what this staff can do, with this roster.
Ty, what did you make of Fernandez' choice for Hopkins and Williams' decision to come back?
Yeah, I think the Fernandez, get was huge. I'm sure Hopkins people will say, well, first things first, it pisses off the Syracuse people, which I'm sure they like to do. But in general, it's someone that I think will, help them in the middle of the field at the faceoff X. I think that Fernandez was just, such a presence, despite his lack of size, a presence and energy. From the wings, he's phenomenal off the ground. And I think, I really feel like that unit and Kyle Prouty will get a big boost by having Fernandez there. And I think that, I'm also intrigued to see what they do defensively. I can see someone like Jared Reinson maybe bumping down and playing close. I think he was so valuable up top because his stick work and the kind of athlete he was. But I think they can have Fernandez do that with Hunter Jaronski and maybe bump Reinson down. So I think it was huge because he was by far the most successful, underclassman in the portal. I mean, just by far had so much success and played a lot of games at Syracuse. That big game experience will serve him well. And then, with Cole Williams, that was expected. But I think, that was also huge. I think there's certainly some criticism out there about Williams's career, maybe relative to expectations, that we set. I mean, he was MVP of Under Armour senior year. He was a top 10 recruit and hasn't shown that year-over-year development, at Hopkins. But I do feel like, working with another big lefty in junior and then this staff as a whole, I think that we could really – see the best that Cole Williams has to offer and consistency. I really feel like, this is a staff that can maximize, Cole's talent and the talent of the others. But there's no doubt that those two, yeses that staff got from those two, I think was huge.
So Mark, we'll let you finish with a parting comment. I am ready for whatever you want to sling my way with respect to my desecration of Hopkins' legacy.
No, look, I get it, and I have to take into account that you're a long-suffering Cleveland Browns fan, so you're not used to cheering for a winner. And I'm teasing.
You did get your
NBA championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. No, look, it's. I think what I would say is these are unprecedented times, and we're sitting here almost in the middle of May talking about a coaching change. All things equal, we're not talking about this, but I think that the pieces have been put in place to Johns Hopkins, and I'm looking forward to seeing the new coaching staff put in their stamp. Obviously, they've got gigantic shoes to fill in the eyes of many, but I think it's going to be exciting, and I think it's a time where there's not a lot going on in the world of sports. It's given a lot of people a lot of things to talk about, a lot of speculation, and now everything's in place, and I think people are really excited to see Johns Hopkins and what they're going to look like in the future.
Ty, any last words?
I love a lot of what Mark said about the program, and to kind of ride an earlier point, I think that fans, I think, should support Hopkins lacrosse in a different way. I think that I thought that a lot of criticism was unfair and expectations unreasonable. Whereas it's not a sport where you're going to have, just a handful of champions. I think the parity is a huge part of it. I think what I'm getting at is that, sure, you expect to win, you want to win, but, support the program, properly. I think there's way too much, bad mouthing and, misconceptions and, you know, throwing stones and, you know, tearing players down, you know, whereas you should be building them up. And I think that's what I'd love to see, you know, as someone who's local and cares about Hopkins Lacrosse in a different way. You know, but I hope that this is a fresh start for all parties involved because it's needed. You know, but again, I'll say for the millionth time, I'm pumped to see what this program can do at Hopkins, and especially in these unprecedented times where, you know, you have an element of free agency out there. You know, but I don't feel as though you know, talent will be what gets these programs to the Final Four. It'll be a combination of talent, you know, coaching and, you know, scheming, developing. I mean, it's so many elements. And I think that, you know, folks should be patient, you know, with this Hopkins program because it'll take time. But I do feel like this is a group that can get back to where they were.
And I'll leave you guys with this. You know, I don't want to diminish the role that Johns Hopkins plays in the world of college lacrosse. It is very substantial. I think that, to Mark's point, the history is 136 years old, and in so many instances, Johns Hopkins has been at the forefront of the modernization of lacrosse broadly. I think it's really interesting that Dick Tucker invented the plastic stick and is a Hopkins alum. I think that's a great symbol for the role that the team plays in the sport overall. But I think that when you look at the last 20 years of the program under Dave Petromala's leadership, they made tremendous strides. And, you know, I think that the piece I wrote after his departure, I think does a nice job of listing out what those strides were. But at the same time, you know, in the intervening 5 years, you know, since he got his contract extension and the last 10 years when they've made one Final Four appearance, certainly, you know, the program had in some respects been caught by Ty, as you mentioned, the many different programs that have invested more in their men's lacrosse team in an effort to make it to Final Fours and win national championships. And so when you take what's unfolded over the last 2 weeks to a month and project it over the next 10 years, I think that there are a lot of aspects of this that represent the next modernization of lacrosse, right? You know, the role of a great player and the Canadian influence and, you know, some of the really interesting things about this coaching search that I'm writing about now for a forthcoming story. And I think that it's really interesting to consider what this moment is going to look like in retrospect 10 and 20 years from now. So that's why we recorded this podcast, because then we can 10, 20 years from now listen to it, romanticize how young our voices were,
hopefully, and
see how poorly it aged.
Hopefully it ages well.
Hopefully it ages better than all of us do.
I certainly did not mean to be too altruistic in the defense of Johns Hopkins. I just thought, you know, the argument, whether you love him, whether you hate him, look, no offense, Ty, when I see Alabama line up, I'm hoping Alabama loses more than they win, because I do like to root for the underdog. I'm watching The Last Dance on ESPN right now. I remember rooting for the Trailblazers, rooting for the Sonics, rooting for the Utah Jazz to knock off Michael Jordan, to beat the Bulls so someone new emerges. So, and Terry, your points are well taken, and the sport has changed drastically. But are we having this conversation outside of three or four programs if it's not Johns Hopkins or program X, Y, or Z? I just think that's the impact that Hopkins still holds to this day.
Well, on that note, I'm going to thank you, Mark, for joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Thank you as well to Ty. Follow them on Twitter at Ty Zanders, at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm at Terrence Foy. We are at Inside_Lacrosse. You can hit us up on Instagram as well at Inside Lacrosse. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review, and we'll be back later in the week with more IL podcasts.